What's up and welcome to our recap episode. This is From the Top Rope with myself, Jared Carabas, alongside Robbie Fox. What's up, Octagon Bob?
Not much. We're recording this. It's another midnight edition. You're in the closet for this one. We just tweeted out the picture. Mm-hmm. When we record these shows at night instead of the morning, you just happen to be in very weird locations. Yep. I figured we're gonna kind of swap roles for this one. We're going to have you drive the show because I'm a little tired. I've been low on my Dunkin' Energy punches. And I was less than enthused with WWE's Battleground show. And we set out to make this a very enthusiastic, positive wrestling podcast. They're making it real difficult, but we're going to try. And one of these attempts is you're going to steer the show today.
Yeah, I'm gonna totally take the reins here. And I was honestly surprised because I texted you after the Kevin Owens AJ Styles finish. And you revealed to me that you were not very high on this card. We're going to get to that. We're going to get to that because I was surprised by your reaction. Obviously you being a Kevin Owens guy, and it was right after, Kevin Owens goes over AJ Styles, but obviously we'll get to that. But first we got to plug some shit. We got to get the shit in. And that is to follow us on Instagram and follow us on Twitter at From the Top. There's no rope there. But From the Top, follow us on both Instagram and Twitter. Also subscribe on iTunes and rate the show. It helps us out a lot if you subscribe on iTunes, leave a little rating there, 5 stars. That's the only rating that you possibly can leave, is 5 stars. This is a 5-star program, very Rob Van Dam-esque program that we're running here. So without further ado, we got to get into this. This is, I didn't actually see, was this the pre-show match, the Ty Dillinger versus Aiden English match? This was the pre-show?
Yep, it was.
And did you see this?
I did. It was fine. Aiden English went over, which is interesting because that usually means that they're going to continue this feud, and it's a feud that doesn't really need continuing, but match was actually fine. It was short, everything it needed to be.
Do you think that Ty Dillinger is a talent that should be on the main card?
Absolutely, and I think he's a talent that should be on Raw. Like, I think he's a very weird fit on SmackDown. He's one of the few. I don't have many people on the main roster where I'm like, ooh, they would really benefit from being on the other brand. I felt like before the Superstar Shakeup I did, and then after the Superstar Shakeup, I was wrong in some senses. Like, I thought Sami Zayn really belonged on SmackDown. I still think Finn Balor probably belongs on SmackDown because there's nothing for him to do. I would much rather him be WWE champion on SmackDown than in the mid-card or lower mid-card with... what's his name? The Drifter.
But yeah.
I think Dillinger is definitely a guy that could benefit from being on Raw.
Well, this is kind of going off on a tangent that I didn't really want to go on a pay-per-view recap, but don't you feel like in the very beginning, when they first did the brand split, you know, traditionally, Raw is the A show, SmackDown is the B show. But at the first start of the brand split, there were some lines blurred there. Like, we didn't know.
Yeah.
I mean, there was the A show and the B show, but in reality, it was like, you know, SmackDown was the better show for a little bit there. And they had names, and they, you know, and they were developing names too, which was, I guess, the most important part, is that you had guys who would normally get passed over that were getting opportunities on SmackDown that sort of made them bigger names. Right now, we're not at that point. I don't know where we took a turn to where we've just reverted right back to Raw is the clear A show, SmackDown is the clear B show. But the original brand split, which I was, I guess, reluctant to accept because I hate the whole brand split thing. I hated the original brand split. But now with the original brand split, I was like, SmackDown is a very watchable show. And now it's gotten to a point where it's not as exciting as it was originally.
I thought SmackDown was, like, way more than watchable. SmackDown was, in my opinion, the A show for a while. There were so many fun things going on SmackDown. Like, I don't want to say the Superstar Shakeup was when it really took a turn for the worse. It was already going down before that. WrestleMania season was when it started to, and I think that's when Vince got more involved in things. But SmackDown was awesome, especially the women's division. You had just so many different feuds going on at once. You had Alexa and Becky for the title, which was really cool. Introduced Mickie James back into the equation. Carmella and Nikki had a decent feud going on. Natalya kind of getting involved in that. Now it's just all the women hate each other. We'll talk about that later, obviously, with the five-man. But it's just like the cliche, like, okay, none of them can get along with any of them, and there's factions, and SmackDown was fucking awesome for a while. Dean Ambrose was huge on it. The Miz was great on it. Dolph Ziggler, obviously, really good. And now, yeah, SmackDown is almost as worthless as it was before the brand split ever happened, which is a shame to see happen.
It's a goddamn shame, Rob. And I'm looking at this right now, and I think for the most part, I see what they did here. I see what they did here with going off on, Philly crowd. So I always look at the crowd, you know, in terms of before the show starts, I look at the card, and if it's an underwhelming card, I'm like, oh, it's Philly. That's always going to be a hot crowd. And they were. So I'm looking at what was the opening match? Like, how are they going to get this crowd going, knowing that they want to get going? This is not a crowd that you need to lead in a certain direction. They want to go nuts. So in Philly, they open up the show, SmackDown tag team title match, New Day versus the Usos. I forget. Did you say that the Usos were going to retain?
Yeah, I did.
I did too.
I think we both, you know, pretty much had the same opinion on this. Very surprising that New Day won before SummerSlam, especially I think their betting odds were like Usos were very favored. But this match set the show to a very nice tone. Very exciting match. It was awesome.
Yep.
Show kind of took a turn after that, but I really loved this match, the entire match. One of the better tag team matches of the year, I thought. The false finishers were, there's a lot of them, but I wouldn't say they were overdone. They weren't necessarily all finisher kickouts. There was a lot of cool high spots on the outside. The story they told was great. Xavier Woods was awesome. Like, he was the standout of this whole match. When he did the, he does his elbow, like, across the entire ring, this step over tightrope one, and one of the Usos moved out of the way, the other super kicked him out of the air. That was fucking awesome. That was, like, an amazing spot. Loved this match. This match was like, would you call it like a 4-star match? I don't know. But it was so exciting. The crowd was going absolutely bonkers for it. Like, this set the show to a very nice pace.
Yeah, it was a good match. Biggest thing I took out of this, though, is that finally the New Day can go back to their original entrance, because the one that they were working with now is just, it's very clunky. You know, when they come out and say,
The longest reigning tag champs.
Yes,
they said?
Longest reigning tag team champs. It's like, nope, that doesn't roll off the tongue.
They
doesn't
go right
the
back
tongue.
To, I guess, three time.
Yep.
I like their gear too. Their gear was awesome. They had like the Apollo Creed Rocky IV style gear with the over the top patriotism, and they came out and I was like, that's kind of like strange for this show. I know Battleground is normally flag oriented, but when they won the titles and they held them up and they were the blue titles against that gear, I was like, ooh, that looks really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely a plus match to get the night started, to get the Philly crowd going.
Yeah. Perfect.
Like
opener.
I said, not that difficult to do. I think for the most part, WWE is aware when they, the buzz around their pay-per-views is that this card is going to suck, or it's going to be underwhelming, or the expectations are low. So I thought that was a great way to open up the night. Again, I think it was surprising because we both had the Usos retaining to sort of set up something extra at SummerSlam. So it'll be interesting to see sort of where they go from here, if they're going to have a rematch at SummerSlam. But if the New Day retains, I don't know. I think that they should have saved.
So here's my thing with the title change here. I think you got to add Breezango to the match. And I don't even know if I would take the titles off the New Day necessarily, because I'm not a huge fan of these like short one-month transitional title rings.
No.
But, you know, if you're changing it up like that, you're not going to get that big moment of the New Day retaining or the Usos winning at SummerSlam. Don't make it a one-on-one match. Get Breezango on the card. They weren't on the card tonight, and they were so over when they did that comedy match against... Who was that? Oh, it was against the Usos, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they have to be on the SummerSlam card. They've been so good in the Fashion File stuff that maybe you do that.
So a three-way.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and they actually, they had a little spot later in the night, too, with the behind-the-scenes, like, getting jumped thing.
Yeah. It was, they're doing the Fashion X-Files now.
Yes. Which is great.
It is great. It's awesome.
It reminds me, and I think we talked about this before, about you know, how Wade Barrett basically created his character Bad News Barrett on the what was it?
The JBL and Cole show.
Yeah, which was the YouTube version of that.
Yep.
And it seems like to me they're sort of letting Breezango have their YouTube show, but on the actual programming, which is great. It's certainly building the
character. Especially because Vince wasn't big on it. I said it on the show when it first started, but Vince was really not big on it, and they had to push really hard. And Vince was like, I just don't see it. And then the crowd reaction and the fans online obviously were so over the top, like, this is the best thing on SmackDown every week, that they're sticking with it. And they're really changing it up. They've done the Miami Vice one. Now they're doing the X-Files. They did the old-timey detective stuff. Just every evolution of it is still funny.
You get a tattoo there, Octagon Bob?
Yeah, I do have a tattoo here. I finally got my wrestling tattoo. I got a turnbuckle on my arm. There's a picture of it online. You can check that out.
Yeah, how long did that take?
It took about an hour. It hurt like a motherfucking bitch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right on the bone. Real painful. I looked like a kid crying, like, while he was doing it. I was like, I have the one on my other wrist that says, why not? And that didn't hurt, so I was very calm going into this one, and then as soon as the needle touched skin, I was like, oh, fuck.
It looks like they did a lot of the outline. It looks like they, instead of shading it, it looks like they filled it in with outline. That's a pretty dark tattoo.
It is a dark tattoo. I originally it was going to be shaded, and I said, can you fill in the whole thing?
Oh, yeah. So then I was right. They didn't even use the shading needle. They just fucking outlined the whole thing.
Outlined the whole thing.
Damn. Wow.
Yeah. That is a bold guy.
That's taking it like a champ. Speaking of taking it like a champ, the next match on the card was Shinsuke Nakamura versus Baron Corbin. This was an interesting match for me because, obviously, Nakamura comes up from NXT. You obviously want to build him as being super strong. Baron Corbin wins Money in the Bank. He can't lose either. So for a card like Battleground, I mean, it's, you know, one of these guys could go over clean if this were SummerSlam and there was some sort of build up to a major feud. Not exactly a major feud, but, you know, you do have two guys who you want to protect here. How are they going to do this? I wasn't exactly expecting a clean finish to this one. I can't say that I was disappointed either. I mean, the finish made sense. It was basically Baron Corbin just kicks Shinsuke Nakamura in the balls, which it was pretty funny because I don't know if you pick up on the little details here, but Corbin kicks Nakamura in the balls, and then they announce Nakamura as the winner of the match and start playing his music, but he's just rolling around on the mat, grasping his balls in pain.
Yeah, and the fans are like, he's like, oh, fuck! He kicked me in the dick!
Rolling around on the ground. So there were some other takeaways from this match, too. I think, for me, I've been critical of Baron Corbin in the past, and I think it's because I paid attention to him down in NXT, and there were some other things about how his personality-wise, you know, kind of being like a pain in the ass or a snob or whatever. And for me, I'm warming up to Baron Corbin, and I think it's more because I enjoy his in-ring work more, and I think with the less on the mic, the better for him. And I want him to get better because I think over time, obviously, him being on the mic is going to help evolve and build his character. But as a heel, I think I enjoy him more for his actions more so than his words. So I'm slowly but surely warming up to Baron Corbin. And I think that that's only going to, you know, intensify as we sort of, you know, pay more attention to the Money in the Bank aspect to his character right now.
I totally agree with the less mic time, the better. I feel like a big issue in WWE is they feel like everyone needs to talk. And that was never the case. You know, you never had, like, Kane cutting these long 20-minute promos back in the day because he just didn't need to. He would talk when needed, and it was whatever. Goldberg never cut a promo in his life. He was the most over person in WCW, you know? Yep. Lesnar doesn't talk. He's super over. That was a big mistake with Shinsuke, I thought, in the beginning, when they had him cutting promos against Dolph Ziggler. Yes, he speaks English. Yes, a lot of the WWE casual crowd will laugh at him trying to speak English. So it's like, Nakamura is absolutely someone that doesn't need to talk. He didn't really talk much in NXT, and he was fucking great. The crowd was not into this match. I was not into this match. I liked the finish.
I thought they were into the match in the beginning.
I don't think they were into this match. A lot of what I complained about last week, where it was like Shinsuke selling, and then like a comeback at the end. Almost like Cena's, like old Cena matches where people would complain about the five moves of doom. I'm worried that people are going to start saying that about Nakamura if they keep having him work this style of match. But I just burped live on air. Not a great match, but also nothing in it was bad. I saw Brian Alvarez come out and say that was the worst match of Nakamura's career. I disagree with that completely. I thought this was better than the match he had against Dolph Ziggler on pay-per-view. But the finish made sense. Finish got Baron Corbin over as, you know, a dick. And Baron Corbin is very good at not being the cool heel and instead just being the heel that fans like to dislike. And I like that you said that you're starting to warm up to Corbin, because for me it's been like a very gradual increase in likability for him since he was pretty much since he debuted at WrestleMania 32. I got a lot of WrestleMania 32 vibes from this show, by the way.
Did you?
Yeah, because like the whole show I was like, this is a bad show, but like a lot of the matches had surprising winners.
Yeah. I think
that
we definitely confused
me pretty much. Everyone I was just confused about.
It's definitely a confusing process. Yeah. I think for the most part, this was the right call. There wasn't going to be a situation in this match where there was going to be a twist or a turn because A, it didn't call for it, and B, it wouldn't have made sense. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you know, you have the heel finish, and it's sort of, and this is what we were talking about with the last pay-per-view, is how many of these matches are sort of setting up for a rematch at SummerSlam. I'm not sure that I want to see a rematch.
Was thinking the same thing. It's like, with this and the United States Championship match, those almost should have had clean payoffs so we can get AJ and Shinsuke. If you want to rush that. I don't know if you want to rush it or if you want to save it for WrestleMania. It doesn't really matter because SummerSlam is huge. But, like, are we really going to do this as a rematch and that as a rematch? Because they both had dirty finishes. So unless you do them on SmackDown before and blow it off that way, I think this SummerSlam feud is going to feel very rushed, and like everyone's going to be a little like, whoa, we're just going into storylines here.
Yeah. I've seen enough of this feud. I mean, I like both superstars a lot, and I just think that for
it's
the most
part, it's
just
not much of a feud. It's, you know.
No. It was put together. It's like, hey, you need something to do. I need something to do. Let's fucking have a match. Yeah. And but the other thing too, with Baron Corbin, I want to really buy into him as a top heel. His hairline, man. His fucking hairline. I can't take him seriously as this, you know, badass evil heel when his hairline is just fucking LeBron James before hair plugs. I can't do it.
But someone tweeted me that too, and they're like, do you think Baron Corbin can ever be a top guy with his hairline? And I was like, motherfucker. The two biggest stars in wrestling history are like Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage, and they were rocking fucking skullets in their prime. They had no hair on top, and they had like the Dr. Phil coming down the sides.
That's true.
He should go full skullet, though. He should like just start shaving the top.
Embrace it.
Be a bandana guy.
Go with it.
Yeah.
You know, the way that they sort of describe, you know, the WWE champion, like that's the guy. That's the guy that, you know, the company is going to ride or die with, and he's that guy. But with Baron Corbin, it's like the Money in the Bank winner. It's like that's the guy that we believe in who could potentially be that guy.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know. Write it off as a business expense. Go get yourself some hair plugs, and we'll see what that does for your career, Baron Corbin.
I thought with this finish, by the way, it did plant a little seed in my head that was like, maybe he cashes in tonight. Because Money in the Bank winners always have kind of weird, if they wrestle before the main event, they always kind of have kind of weird finishes, you know. Seth Rollins just lost clean, yeah. They usually lose a lot, or, you know, they'll throw someone off. So when he kicked Nakamura in the balls and just laughed about it, I was like, I wonder if he's going to cash in tonight, and then Nakamura will be able to challenge him for the title.
Yeah.
Which then I would be very interested in it. Like, that would be like, holy shit, that's great feud progression.
Yeah, that would have made sense. And that also sets the table for a discussion that we'll have later in the show in terms of where the fuck are they going to go from here. But next up on the card was the fatal five-way elimination match between Lana, Charlotte, Tamina Snuka, Becky Lynch, and this said Naomi. Naomi wasn't even in the match.
No, Naomi was not in the match. She was on commentary.
Yeah, so
say that on the Wikipedia you're reading off?
It says that on the PW Mania results thing.
Oh.
Yeah. But so I think I figured out why I don't like Naomi so much.
Why is that?
Because it was, you know, I didn't know why for the longest time. And I started to dislike her during this whole, like, glow gimmick. And I'm sitting there tonight watching her entrance to commentate. And she comes out, the music hits, she's doing the dance, she's got the hair and the lights and the belt and all that shit. And I was just like, you know what? I think I don't like her because of her entrance. Like, it's too much for someone.
Do you not like raves?
I'm not a big rave guy.
Not an EDM guy?
It's too much of a to-do, you know, for, like, they kind of just decided that Naomi was going to be this spectacle. And
it got her so over, though. The entrance is what got her over.
But it didn't, because when she came out tonight, like, she did the whole dance.
I would say that in the beginning, the entrance absolutely got, like, when she won the SmackDown Women's Championship for the first time, crowd was going wild for her.
Yeah,
WrestleMania, crowd was going wild for her.
She has a great story. She has a great story.
But I think the entrance is absolutely what got her over in the beginning.
But it's not doing it now because
it didn't do it tonight. But like tonight,
it didn't do it tonight in front of a Philly crowd.
But the crowd was bad. Like, since after the first match, I felt like the crowd is bad.
So I just kind of look at the women's division, and if you were to do a power rankings in terms of likability, in-ring ability, mic skills, the whole deal, if you were to compile all that down to a power rankings of the women's division, Naomi wouldn't be in like the top 3, 4, 5. Like, she wouldn't be in there. So, like, I look at that entrance.
She would be in my 3 if you're just talking SmackDown.
No. I'm talking the entire, women's division.
Okay. Yeah. She wouldn't be.
Yes. So I kind of look at that as like, it's this huge grand entrance for not really a top talent in the division. And it's like, I don't know, would you have a mid-carder come out with this, like, huge pyro, like that they would do at, like, the beginning of a pay-per-view? It just seems weird. It just seems a bit much.
I really disagree with you on this one. I think her entrance is great, and when her music hit and the lights went out and the crowd, you know, the crowd wasn't popping for anything really tonight, but I was like, oh, this is good, because her entrance is an attraction, much like Nakamura's is. Like, Nakamura, to the casual fan, is kind of a mid-carder. They haven't really showed us anything special about him. His entrance is just as elaborate. So it's like, when her music hit, I was like, oh, good for the crowd, that they didn't get Naomi, but at least they could still get her entrance, because she's coming out to do commentary. So I think the whole visual of it's great. Her hair's glowing, her glasses, the title now, her shoes. I think it's a good visual. I think it got her over in the beginning. And elaborate entrances for mid-carders, I don't think they should be reserved for main eventers. We had Billy Gunn on the show. Like, the New Age Outlaws had the best entrance of all time.
But they made it the best.
They were
mid-carders. They made it the best. Naomi was handed this entrance. That's what I don't like about it.
She dances, and she does she slides on her knees, which I don't understand the physics of that. Like, I don't know how she slides so far on the video boards with knee pads on. I don't know what kind of knee pad she wears, but
anyways,
I'd like to try that one day if we ever have like a really good relationship with WWE. Just try to slide on the knees or something. Yeah, but I would be like, Naomi, what kind of knee pads do you wear?
Yeah, that's fair.
And do that. I would just like to do entrances. That'd be sick. Imagine that.
That would be sick. I would.
Who would be your number one if they were like, yeah, we'll hit the music, go reenact the entrance.
Wow, on
mine's,
the spot.
Mine's
huh?
So easy, and it's like so. Like, obvious, I would just want to do Daniel Bryan's.
Like, do you get the pyro with it too?
Yeah, like the full nine. I think I would just want to do Daniel Bryan's. I would want to go down doing the fucking yes, yes, yes. Go on the turnbuckle, do it. But it's tough because the best entrances are made by the crowds, you know. So it's like,
yeah,
if nobody's chanting yes with me, it's a little weird. But my number two would probably be Finn Balor, because he does the thing with the lights where he throws his hands up.
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
But if there's no fans there, it's like still not as cool.
Right. I would probably pick Brock Lesnar if we get to do the
Lesnar would be sick. There's no way you could do the jump, though. You think you could jump up to the ring like him?
Fuck yeah.
No way, dude.
You don't think I'm athletic enough to jump fucking 3.5 feet in the air?
Dude, the ring is kind of high. You weren't at the Barstool Combine, but bloggers don't have good verticals, man.
I guess, but, I mean, you're putting me in the same class as, like, fucking Nate as an athlete?
No, I'm not putting you. I'm putting you with, like,
Glennie Falls?
No, I'm putting you more with, like, Coley, Vertigo. Vertigo boy literally couldn't look up to do his jump, missed the vertigo thing, missed the vertical, whatever. But I don't think you could make that jump. That's a hard jump to make. It's a hard jump to make.
Literally the first try. If we ever go to Pat McAfee's ring and wherever the fuck that is, I'm going to make the jump, and it's going to be very easy. I'm going to do it on one try, flat-footed, without a running shot.
I'm telling you, you're not.
I want you to video it.
By the way, when I was training, most embarrassing moment of my training career was probably we were doing blow-up drills, which are basically, you know, you run the ropes, do, like, leapfrogs, you know, whatever, roll-throughs. Just basically make you so tired that you throw up. And they were like, all right, Fox, get in the ring. And everyone was sliding into the ring, doing that cool, like, edge type thing, yeah, but without a running start. So I just was like, oh, yeah, I could do that. And I, like, tried to do it, didn't realize it's extremely hard to do if you've never done it before, hit my face on the bottom rope, and then just, like, stayed stationary. I didn't slide at all. I kind of just, like, jumped onto the apron, and then I just rolled in, like, with this look on my face, like, oh, fuck. There's, like, 30 people. It wasn't fun.
No.
It wasn't
fun. Yeah, for sure. For sure. It doesn't seem fun.
So, the match.
The match. Right. It was the match five-way.
This was a very interesting structure, and the way it was put together really irked me, because we had our tag team of Lana and Tamina, maybe the least talented duo in WWE history, putting heat on Charlotte for the majority of the match while everyone else was just laying down on the outside. Charlotte, God bless her. I tweeted it. God bless her for selling for these two, because she was trying to make it look convincing. Lana was 10 feet from her head with kicks.
Yeah.
Not even close. Charlotte, this also provoked a thought in my head while this is going on, where I was like, is Charlotte the greatest women's wrestler of all time? And I started to, like, really think about that during this match, because I was like, I don't know if there's anyone in history that can do what she's doing right now. And you got to really start to think about that. But the whole, like, story they were telling was strange, because this was an elimination match. Mm-hmm. So if wrestler A is going for a pin on wrestler B, and you are wrestler C, you want to let that happen, so your odds of winning that match are better. Everyone was breaking up every pinfall and submission the entire fucking match, and it made zero sense. Only once was it Lana breaking up something on Tamina, where I was like, I guess you can make the case that it's like Lana was partnering up with Tamina in this match, and she's inexperienced, so she kind of needs that. But what if it came down to the two of them? It's like, what would she do then? I have no, like, this was, it's something that frustrates me in a lot of elimination matches. They'll do it in the Elimination Chamber, I think, if you go back. So Reddit doesn't call us sexist again. It has probably happened in the Elimination Chamber this year. But this time, it just made no sense. And when there finally were pinfalls, it was like 1, 2, 3. So you went from 5 people in the match to this is a one-on-one match instantly.
Yep.
It's very strange. The Natalia and Charlotte were the final two. Their portion of the match was good, and I enjoyed it. Charlotte did her moonsault off the top, ate the knees. I kind of dug the finish, but finishes have been weird in the women's division almost since Alexa Bliss beat Bayley by hitting her head into the turnbuckle. This was almost the same finish. But I guess you do the, like, do you want Charlotte to tap out to the sharpshooter? I would have probably done, like, the same finish, but Charlotte gets up, eats a discus clothesline or something, maybe passes out in the sharpshooter. But if you want to, you know, it's hard to do passing out in the sharpshooter without people immediately being like, they're doing the Stone Cold thing. And you definitely don't want that for this match.
But, and you definitely don't want that for this pay-per-view either.
Yeah, the, like, Natalya Naomi doesn't interest me a ton for SummerSlam. That doesn't feel like a SummerSlam caliber match, because what are you going to do with the two best wrestlers in the division, Becky and Charlotte? It looks like they're going to be in a tag team match together against Tamina and Lana, which definitely doesn't interest me. But this match, everything when it was five people was horrendous. Once it got down to the one-on-one, was enjoyable. So it's like a very, it was a tale of two halves, you know, to quote journalists all around the world.
At the risk of once again getting heat from Redditors about sexism, I think that the brand split killed all the momentum of the women's revolution. I think it killed all of it, because once they split the division in half, I think that the division would have continued to thrive if they kept all of them together. But once they split the talent in half, that sort of minimized what they were able to do with the top stars. And now you have, you know, matches like this where, like you said, Charlotte is left to sort of carry the likes of Tamina and Lana. And obviously Becky's great. Natalia's been there for almost a decade.
Yeah, I should say, Becky did do a lot of work in this match with, like, exploder suplexes that they called a Bexploder suplex every time. To the point where it was like, all right, guys, we understand the thing that you're pushing here, but we can call them exploder suplexes.
Yeah.
She also did a lot of work in this match. She's great.
Yeah. But I just think that when they split the division, it really hurt. And now, in terms of momentum, you know, like you said, you go into SummerSlam with Natalia versus Naomi, and that's the title match for the SmackDown Women's Championship.
How are you going to make people excited for that?
You can't. You don't have enough time. And
especially with Naomi. I'm a Naomi defender. We've had this Naomi discussion a ton on the show. She hasn't really been wrestling. Like, she wasn't even featured on this pay-per-view, yet fans are supposed to be like, yes, this is our defending champion that we want to really rally behind. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, the momentum is just, it's done. The momentum's done. I used to look forward to the women's matches, and now it's like, I couldn't tell you who's a face and who's a heel. It's like the thing with Charlotte,
too.
It's
hard to tell on SmackDown.
Yes, like Charlotte, what is she now? Like, I guess she's a face.
She is a face, but there, you know.
But the turn was poor.
She also shouldn't be a face. Charlotte has shown that she's an okay babyface. I mean, she's amazing in the ring. I said on this episode, she might be the greatest of all time women's wrestler. Yeah. She is awesome as a heel. I think she's like really good on the mic as a heel.
Yep.
Not good as a face. Some people just aren't. Some people just don't have that in them. And you should play to your talent's strengths. You shouldn't.
Well, I mean, the fact that they had to turn her face in the first place just goes to show you that they just didn't have enough talent within the.
Yeah, the thing is, they just need more people. They need more people in the division, and the problem is solved. And you need to have individual feuds. Don't treat this as like a cruiserweight thing where it's like these guys are a separate part of the show because they all hate each other. They should be treated exactly like the men in the sense that like some people have issues with others. Over stupid shit. I don't know. It's pro wrestling. Like, it shouldn't be. We all hate each other. It should be. Charlotte hates fucking Tamina. Do that for you. I don't care. You know. You need NXT call ups. You need people coming back. I don't know. The Mae Young Classic is going on next month. Maybe I know a bunch of those people are signed. Bring up the current crop of NXT girls and make the NXT girls the Mae Young Classic girls. I don't know.
Yeah, they definitely got to do something because. Naomi and Natalia.
By the way,
did I?
Yep, you're good.
Okay. Just complete. I'm not interested in that match whatsoever. Don't give a shit. And I don't think that they have enough time to make me give a shit. Next match on the card was Kevin Owens versus AJ Styles for the United States Championship. We can speak to this because we saw it. A lot of folks didn't see the MSG match. Would you say that the MSG match was better? Their rematch at Battleground.
Way better. I think it was, like, not even close. This match, I don't know what it was. This match just didn't really click with me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the ref bump was awesome. It was one of the coolest ref bumps I've ever seen, where AJ Styles was, like, on Kevin Owens' shoulders, and he just fucking tossed him like a bag of garbage. Mm-hmm. Tossed him into the referee, and AJ took an awesome bump on it. The ref bump proved to be inconsequential, because there was a botched finish that I can't speak much about, but it was a botched finish for sure. The match just it didn't do it for me, and I don't know
why can't you speak about this botched finish, Robbie?
It's very under wraps right now, and I don't know what I can say and what I can't say. But it didn't go the way things were supposed to go.
Wait, are you trying to say that AJ Styles was supposed to retain?
I can't really speak to that.
I mean, that's so are you waiting for someone else to sort of clarify?
Yeah, I'm not going to be the one to break this news, but someone will break it.
It'll come out this week.
Like, it'll probably be out by the time this episode comes out, but I'm not going to be the one to break this news.
Okay. So you're more the react guy than the...
I mean, the UFC thinks that I'm a journalist. I'm not. So I'm not the guy that breaks the news. I'm the guy that reacts to it.
But so overall, I agree with you. I agree with you that the MSG match was noticeably better. Noticeably better. And obviously... our styles are much different. You're more on the technical side. You can actually break down these matches far better than I ever could, as you know, just a fan. But as just a fan, it was noticeably better. The MSG match, there were a lot more false finishes. They went all out. Like, they pulled up the stops at the MSG match versus this one, which just kind of felt like
it's almost like this one was supposed to go longer than it went.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like something went wrong, which is you look at that finish and you just go
There you go. It's like that emoji with the thing on his chin. He's like
Do you want to actually, instead of waiting, do you want to talk about Kevin Owens on Talking Smack?
Kevin Owens, so this was the highlight of the night for me. Like, the entire night was, that was like, all right, Kevin Owens is going to be on Talking Smack. No matter what happens, Kevin Owens is going to be on Talking Smack. Hopefully that delivers, and it over-delivered. This was maybe, I'm going to burp again. There it is. Maybe Kevin Owens' best performance ever on Talking Smack, to the point where Renee Young, multiple times, was just laughing. Like, at insults directed towards her. It was just like, he was hitting her with everything. He was chanting for Jerry Lawler, who was co-hosting Talking Smack. And then he was like, did the crowd ever cheer your name? I don't think so. And she's like, actually, they did tonight during the pre-show. And he was like, oh, you had family here? And she just started laughing. And he's like, oh, good response. You're just laughing right in my face. Good response. He was like, you got to go out of your way. It was, what, 5-8 minutes or something of him on the show? He, like, barged in. He was the first segment on the show. Go out of your way, and you have to see Kevin Owens on Talking Smack. He even gave a shout-out to the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. He was like, I am the elite. Wink, wink. Like, that was fucking awesome.
Yeah, he was great. There were a lot of legit laugh-out-loud moments. And then what was the thing that he said? He was like, well, you could kind of tell, like, that he made reference to the finish, because he was like, well, I guess I'm your new United States champion, America. So congrats to you guys.
Yeah, congrats to you guys, he said. Yeah. I don't know what the situation with this title is going to be going into SummerSlam, but it'll be very interesting.
Do you think, yes or no, the program with AJ Styles continues into SummerSlam?
After tonight, yeah, probably, yeah.
That's interesting. Uh-huh. So, I mean, after people listen to this podcast, if whatever news that's coming out hasn't come out yet, a lot of people are going to be going back to the WWE Network to sort of, you know, scan that with a fine-tooth comb to see what kind of went wrong at the end of that match, which is interesting to say the least. And we can say the same thing about this flag match between Rusev and John Cena. This is another, I guess, feud that we shit on quite a bit, because A, we've seen it before. B, it didn't really make sense to bring John Cena back to feud with Rusev, who is also coming back. It was just, it felt like, well, we're both kind of on pace to come back at the same time. Might as well have a feud together just because of timing, which I didn't entirely agree with. I thought and we'll get to this obviously later in the show, the Jinder Mahal, Randy Orton feud, which seemingly will never end. I think that it would have made way more sense to have Cena come back and sort of feud with Jinder Mahal. And if the plan is to sort of keep building Mahal than he could have used the Cena rub. But instead, we get a repeat feud that we've already seen before between John Cena and Rusev. We get a stupid gimmick match.
Can we just go back to, by the way, how this gimmick match was started? I was really thinking about this. I included it in my Battleground preview blog, but it makes me laugh so hard. Like, so John Cena comes back and he's like, I'm not a part-timer. I'm an all-timer. And he came back on July 4th and he was like, I love my country. And then Rusev comes out and Rusev's like, I don't like your country. Your country sucks. And John Cena's like, well, you can talk as much shit about me as you want, but you can talk shit about my fucking flag and my fucking country. So how about I hang up my flag in that corner and I hang up your flag in that corner? The first one to grab their flag, run up the ramp, and stick it in the ground, that's the country that's better. It's like, John, what?
Yeah.
What the fuck does that mean, John? Like, he went full redneck and he wasn't like, let's settle this like men. The winner of a match. Then we'll know who the real man is, the real country. He was like, let's get this hokey stipulation that's like a weird game of capture the flag. in kayfabe, this is such a weird reaction to Rusev coming out and being like, I really don't like the country that you're from. John's like, all right, remember WCW? Let's do a flag match. So weird. It's so weird, but I don't know. It made me laugh. This match went so long. This was the longest match I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
It wasn't horrible, but it was just like, it was almost like the last match was supposed to go longer.
So this match felt to me like a match that the company would stick on one of the USO shows.
Yeah.
That's where, because they sort of, on the USO shows.
It would almost
shows,
make sense there.
Right. It would make sense in. It would, that's like when they do the USO shows, they kind of go off script in terms of what the active feuds are, and they kind of just plan for that one night. That's what this felt like. It was just like, there's no real feud here. It was just like one little mini confrontation on the night of both of their returns that evolved into a flag match. And then what did you think? John Cena, like, was going to not fucking stick the American flag in the little holder in Philadelphia when you got JBL saying, this is the birthplace of America, Michael. Like, it's just like, it's not going to go any other way. They're not going to have, Rusev stick the Bulgarian flag in there and have the American flag on the ground, especially, you know, how prideful WWE is of, you know, their support of the troops and all that. So, yeah, it was a very predictable ending to a feud that no one really cared about and a match that didn't really have to ever happen.
Rusev took a crazy bump at the end, though.
Like, he threw
the two tables onto the stage. That had to suck. When he took out the other table, I thought he was going to stack them. And that would have, like, I would take any bump in the world if I was going through two tables.
Yeah.
Like, me and one of my friends have had this conversation. My friend was like, yeah, I'd jump off the Empire State Building if I was going through two tables. Like, two tables are basically the equivalent of jumping onto a mattress. Rusev, they were not stacked on top of one on top of the other. They were next to each other. And he went through both of them onto the stage. And I was like, oh, fuck, that must have sucked. One of my favorite Twitter follows there is this guy, Tom Blarg. Tom, a.k.a. The Big Dog, is his Twitter name. And he said he wished that John Cena just AA'd Rusev right onto the flagpole, just
impaled him.
Impaling him. He's like, that would have been a much cooler finish. But yeah, it was like, I don't know. The match, like I said, nothing about it was like, this is bad. It just seemed to drag on forever and ever and ever. And then it had like the ending that we all knew was coming. Would have been like maybe cool if Rusev won. It would have been like, oh shit, John Cena can't defend his country like he used to, the former Marine. And Rusev and JBL said, that has to be the biggest win of John Cena's career. Yep. And I was like, what the fuck? John Cena's literally like never lost to this guy. John Cena's beat this guy 1,000 times.
Yeah.
I don't even know what
no
the...
No titles.
What would be the sports comparison? It's like the Blackhawks beating the Blues in the playoffs. It's like, that has to be the biggest win of their career. It's like, they've done it 100 times, dude. That'd
pretty much be like the Yankees beating the Red Sox before 2004.
Yeah, yeah, and it being called the biggest win of their career, like, in a regular season game, too.
Yeah, yeah, it's
just such a bizarre line. Like, I don't know how anyone on commentary didn't like look at him like, dude, you can't say that on air.
Mm-hmm. It was a little strange. I hope that that was just kind of John Cena's reintroduction to, you know, being in the spotlight again, back on the active roster. I do not wish to see this continue past this match. Uh-oh. You know, you had your little disagreement about whose country's better. John Cena won. America's great. Your country stinks. And that should just be the end of it. I don't know. I'm interested to see. I don't know if you have any insight on this. What's next for John Cena, especially with SummerSlam coming up? And you know, you made this point before about how he always puts on excellent matches at SummerSlam. I'm curious to see who they put him in a program with for this.
I think it's going to be Jinder.
You do?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I do.
Fuck. Like, how are they going
to keep it? Unless he wants to go for the U.S. title again and restart that open challenge thing, which would be awesome. And it would actually, like, you would be able to get some stars on SmackDown doing that. But I don't think it'll be that. I think that'd be the way to go. But I wouldn't take the title off Owens right away. I just spoke about, like, not liking the one-month title reigns. Someone also tweeted me, and they were like, how the fuck can you call Cena Mr. SummerSlam if he's 1-8? It's like, dude.
He's 1-8 at SummerSlam? That's a legit statistic?
I guess maybe in the last 9 years. I don't know if that's true, but, like, even if it is, it's like, I'm not calling him Mr. SummerSlam because of a fake win-loss record. I'm saying The quality of the matches he puts on at SummerSlam are always awesome.
True.
It's very weird. Like, he had AJ last year, Seth Rollins the year before that, Daniel Bryan, his first ever, the first ever pay-per-view Cena versus Orton match was at SummerSlam 2007, and that match is fucking awesome. You want to go back and see a good match, the first Cena-Orton is, if you're not tired of seeing those two in a ring together, it's really good. I think it's Jinder. Jinder was one of the, like, five or six superstars advertised in that SummerSlam trailer they showed today, making me be like, oh, he's going to retain in the main event. And I also got the little, I saw the picture of Kali at the Philly airport, and I was like, I mean, there's no reason for him to be there other than if he's on the show tonight. So that
I didn't see that picture.
I got that spoiled for me, which I didn't really care about. I was like, are they really going to close a show with the Great Kali in 2017?
Mm.
He killed the man. People forget that.
People forget that. Yeah. That was So I didn't see the picture in the airport, but
the picture's actually very funny because his face isn't in it. It's like a flight attendant like posing with him, but it's like the middle of his chest to like his shins. But you can tell who it is. Like, obviously, no other human being is shaped like he is.
Yeah,
but it's a very strange picture.
Yeah, basically, when his music hit, I was like, Jinder's music hit.
Yeah.
Because
his Titantron came up and everything.
Because Kali doesn't have heel music, I don't think. Well, he did way back in the day, but
I don't even remember what his theme was. I think it was pretty racist, but
probably. But yeah.
Next match was Mike Kanellis versus
Sami Zayn.
This felt like a pre-show match to me. Like the entire everything, a bit like the crowd was. You could hear a needle drop for this.
Well,
match.
Yeah, I mean. No one was invested in this, but they weren't supposed to be. It's obviously not a high profile type feud, and
it was a buffer match before the main event. I loved Mike Kanellis' gear. I thought his gear was great. He had it reminded me of like Shawn Michaels' gear almost.
Yeah,
like the kissy faces all over it, and he had a jacket with Maria's face painted on the back of it. Didn't really look like Maria, but
there's a portrait of her on the pants too.
Yeah, on the pants, and Maria was also wearing a jacket with her own face on it, which you're quickly realizing, like, the power of love is that he really, really, really loves Maria, and she really, really, really loves herself, which I love. Like, pussy-whipped Mike Kanellis is an awesome gimmick, but he lost in this match.
He did.
With Maria's help. Maria helped him.
Which seemed odd.
And then he still lost, which... Nice that Sami Zayn is going over. We like to see Sami Zayn get a push. I do, at least. I'm a huge Sami Zayn guy. But he didn't need this win more than Mike Kanellis did. This WrestleMania 32 almost. Like, what the fuck were they thinking with this?
Yeah, Sami didn't
immediately
need this win.
You lose the appeal of, like, Maria helping him in matches, leading him to win, which is what his character should be. I like that a lot. It's very strange. I don't know. I was very confused by this whole thing.
Yeah,
but we were at a point in the night where I was just like, yeah, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. as a buffer match, no one cares. But for Mike Bennett slash Kanellis to, you know, have a match on a pay-per-view card, and it seems like, you know, obviously if the casual WWE fan doesn't really know him or his work, but it seemed like it was a no-brainer for him to go over here. Like, Sammy didn't need this win, and obviously it doesn't hurt him very much to lose if Maria is helping out. So
yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Weird decision to have Sammy go over there. But this, again, as you said, was just to warm everyone up, maybe a little bit of a piss break, maybe go grab a beer before they dropped the Punjabi prison over the ring. Again, this is Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal rematch number 57, something like that. I guess the appeal of having this match, you know, another rematch, obviously it's like, all right, the Punjabi prison, we haven't seen that in about 10 years. I don't know. It's just, I wasn't that into it. In it sucks because we even said, we were like, we're going to be a positive show. And then every single match since the tag title match is like, well, wasn't into it. This
I
one
know.
Sucked.
It's like, I don't, I've gotten some tweets too. It's like, you guys said you were going to be positive and you haven't been. I feel like we mostly have been, but when we have these shows dedicated to pay-per-view recaps, I feel like our listeners would rather hear us give our genuine thoughts than lie and say every match was great. Cause I can't lie and say this was great. I can say this match had some great things in it. When, first of all, the Punjabi prison is like insulting to anyone that buys a ticket, because how many people tweeted us their views, which were basically non-views. You can't see shit that's going on in the ring through the two bamboo structures. Our social media guy, Nick, I'm going to fucking mispronounce his last name again. Buono. I'm going to say Buono. I mean, that's definitely wrong. But he was front row. He had a from the top rope sign. It was awesome. It got on screen like all night. He's front row. And I texted him during the main event. I'm like, dude, how's your view? And he texted me. He's like, literally can't see shit. Front row tickets, like $600 tickets. Couldn't see the main event at all. So that's tough. I forgot about the rule thing. I'm sure they said it on SmackDown and I just like zoned out. I forgot about there's three doors on the first structure and you can request one to be opened for 60 seconds, but once it closes after those 60 seconds, it gets padlocked and you can no longer use that door. This whole thing feels like a fucking Legends of the Hidden Temple skit. But yeah. Obviously all three of those get padlocked. Once they escaped to the outside and they were in between two structures, I actually didn't think any of the match was bad. Once they were out there, because it was just brutal, which is kind of what we wanted. We were like, it should just be a brutal match. As soon as they were outside of the main structure, I was like, all right, like I could kind of get down with this. Especially because the Singh brothers got involved, and we talk all the time about how awesome the Singh brothers are. The one of them took, I mean, it was 15, 20 feet high, a bump off the Punjabi prison through the table, and his back hit this fucking table so hard because the way those tables, they're designed to explode, obviously, but it almost, remember when Vince took the bump? It was like the most brutal table bump I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Where Stone Cold hit his head off the cage and he fell back and he, like, the one part of the table didn't explode, so it just chopped his back in half.
Wasn't that the St. Valentine's Day Massacre?
Yeah. It was almost that bump. It was a lot safer for the Singh brother because the table exploded much quicker, but it was almost to that level. These guys, I wonder if they go into these pay-per-views and they're like, all right, Randy, we have our idea for like the crazy fucking bump we want to take tonight, or if it's Randy being like, all right, boys, and tonight you're going to jump 15 feet through a table. They're like, oh, fuck, in my dress shirt and dress pants and dress shoes. But yeah, that was awesome. That, like, bump was so cool, it made a little bit of this pay-per-view worth watching.
Yeah, it was a great bump. It was definitely a high spot, brought some energy back into the match. Obviously, it wasn't, there was still like another 10 minutes left. Yeah, definitely a huge pop.
That definitely should have happened more towards the, that should have been like Randy makes the guy take the bump, goes to the other side of the cage, and then you do the Kali stuff, because then it's like, oh, he was so close, he just had the crowd behind him. The crowd could kind of carry over that energy. The Kali thing is I'm not saying, like, that's when you do the huge Kali reveal, because that's indefensible. Closing a show with the great Kali in 2017.
Yeah, but I mean, they're really trying to hammer home the 1.3 billion people in India thing.
I know they are. And
trying to do that.
It makes me so angry, Jared.
Does it?
28 billion people. No, here's what makes me angry. 1.3 billion people. Mm-hmm. 28 million speak Punjabi. So it's like, dude, you're like, let me speak the language of my people. But that is like living in America and being like, let me speak the language of my people, and like going off in Mandarin. Everyone being like, wait, what? That's not really, like, it confuses me so much. They're like, the Punjabi prison, India's trademark. It's like, what are you even talking about? This is a little bit racist.
Yeah, it's, but it gets, people don't know that, though. Like, the average American is not going to know that. It still serves its purpose.
I don't think Vince knows that. I don't think Vince knows that at all.
Probably not.
I think he thinks, oh, yeah, everyone in India speaks Punjabi. They're all Punjabs over there. God damn it, pal. They're going to love this match. Bamboo everywhere. The crowd's going to love it. They'll smell the bamboo. It's going to be fucking fantastic. Have some fun, damn it.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where you got to take it for what it is. Know that it's not going to be a perfect creation. It's different, it's unique. It's something that we're not going to see very often, I hope.
Something I saw too, this was the 11-year anniversary of the first one, to the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
That surprised me. First one people forget was the Big Show versus The Undertaker.
Which made no fucking sense.
No, it was supposed to be Undertaker Kali, and then Kali got hurt right before it. And they were like, we still made this fucking big bamboo thing. Want to use it?
Yeah. But with Kali, I mean, when is the last time that we saw him? Probably 2013, I want to say.
Yeah, when like he was in a love angle with Natalya, who couldn't stop farting.
Yes, right.
That was horrible.
Weird.
Super
weird.
Kali can't move is my thing. Like, is he going to be back? I hope not, because he can't move.
I hope
not
either.
I don't want to see that guy.
Yeah, I was just...
He kept grabbing Jinder's title and holding it up at the end. And if you go back, Jinder was looking at him like, all right, dude, like, you're done playing with my title. Like, I have to hold this up for the final shot.
Yeah. Yeah, it was awkward. So when Jinder's music hit, I was like, okay, this has to be the Great Kali. And then he comes out, and it's like, okay, it's great. And then I knew that it was supposed to be like a holy shit moment where Kali returns to interfere so that Jinder can retain. But the only thing I'm thinking in my head is like, how is he going to botch this? Like, this clunky, uncoordinated,
so clunky.
How is he going to do something that looks so unnatural, so awkward that it ruins the whole finish of the match? And I guess
he was fine.
Yeah,
but when he started climbing that structure, I was just like, oh boy, he's really going for it. It's like his legs. You can't see his legs because they're covered with his generic black pants, the most boring pants ever.
He has no ass. His fucking back just goes straight down.
Straight
down. He has no ass whatsoever. It's bizarre. I've never seen anything like it.
I wouldn't be shocked if he rolled up the sleeves of his pants and they were just Legos. Like his legs were made out of Legos because that's how immobile they are.
Yeah. So obviously Kali interferes, Jinder retains in this basically 4-on-1 match against Randy Orton. I don't know. I thought that there was a chance that Orton could win this, and there was like that sort of suggestion that if Randy Orton wins, and that would tie him with Cena, correct? They would both have 14 championships?
No, Cena's tied the record this year. He's got 16.
He's got 16?
Yep.
So wait, I think, would that have been 16 for Randy?
No, that would have been 14 for Randy.
Oh, I thought that they were going to be closer than that.
No.
All right, never mind. I was going to say that they could have had get Randy to be even.
I think they should still get Randy to be even before you put 17 on Cena. I think they should be fighting for that 17. I think that's a feud waiting to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be way more appealing than John Cena going over Jinder Mahal to have the record.
I think it should be face versus face, too. I mean, fans would obviously side with Orton just by nature of the let's go Cena, Cena sucks crowd, but
yeah.
I think they would side with Orton, but I think it'd be really cool if Cena was almost a dick about it. And he's like, you were always in my fucking shadow. You were the B guy while I was on top.
Yeah.
And you were cycling in and out, and I was always, you know, in the same spot. And Orton's like, well, I'm still fucking here, and you're a part-timer. Like, that would be fucking cool if you did that as a Mania feud. I'd be so down.
Yep. But instead, we have Jinder Mahal.
The modern-day Maharaja.
Still the goddamn WWE champion, and
still looking
I'm confused.
Like Bane from Batman.
It's honestly, like, what are they going to do with him at SummerSlam? Like, how are they going to make us care? There has to be...
The crowd's going to... No matter who he's against, the crowd's going to turn on the match, I think.
Probably.
I don't think there's anyone on the roster you can put against Jinder Mahal that the crowd wouldn't just... Like, the crowd will do their We Are Awesome fucking beach ball mania. It's going to be one of those situations. The crowd will not root for anyone in his match at SummerSlam.
Yeah, probably not. But... Just for the sake of wondering, you say John Cena?
As of right now, as of 12:30 a.m. the night of Battleground, I'm going to say John Cena. I think it'll become much more clear on SmackDown Tuesday night.
So then if it is John Cena, then we can circle back to that last point about how he's not going to break Ric Flair's record against fucking Jinder Mahal. So that means
Jinder Mahal. I wouldn't put it past him. I mean, his record-tying reign, which is supposed to be huge, I mean, it was literally historic, whether you consider Ric Flair's 16-time championship true or not, because he's had, like, 22, I think, officially. But yeah. WWE, for all purposes' sake, says 16. That was a one-month transitional reign, and he lost it his first defense. So it's like, I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him to give him 17 against Jinder. I think they might think that's a big moment.
That's fucking ridiculous if they do that.
Yeah.
That would be such a letdown.
It would be.
It's a letdown either way. It's a letdown either way if that's what we're going to see at SummerSlam. If it's Cena and Jinder Mahal, that's going to be a tremendous letdown. Because what did John Cena do besides beat Rusev to even earn a title opportunity? And in a match between those two guys, how are you going to have Jinder Mahal go over as the champion at SummerSlam, and how are you going to have John Cena break Ric Flair's record against Jinder Mahal? The whole thing just sucks. I just hope that that's not the match that we see at SummerSlam.
I hope not, too. But, like, I don't know who they're going to put what John
else
Cena
do you
against.
Do?
It's
And who else do you put Jinder against?
SmackDown's almost booked themselves into a corner where I feel like Raw has a lot of intriguing matchups. Like, I think the main event of SummerSlam, the Fatal 4-Way Hoss match between Braun, Brock, Joe, and who's the other one?
Roman.
Oh, Roman. I think, like, that's worth the price of admission. Like, I'm at SummerSlam for that match, and I don't give a fuck what else is on the card.
I guess what they could do is have Baron Corbin cash in and announce that he wants the match at SummerSlam. SummerSlam.
You could, but I think with Corbin, especially the way he beat Shinsuke tonight in that heel fashion, just kicking, or not beat him, but, you know, kick Shinsuke in the dick, I think they're going to run with he's going to have a really cheap cash-in.
Yeah, for sure. Like an Edge-type cash-in.
Yep.
Which is going to be a good character builder for him. So overall, what's your grade? What's your grade for Battleground?
Oh, boy. I can't give it an F because there were aspects of the show that I enjoyed, like the tag match, which I thought was phenomenal. Almost like the first Battleground pay-per-view ever. Show was not very good. A lot of people looked down at that show as a one-match show with the Rhodes family versus the Shield for their jobs back.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like this show. If you go back, Randy Orton versus Daniel Bryan main evented that one, and Big Show came out and just punched them both in the face, and that was the end of the pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
Bad finish, but the match before that was pretty good. I would say like a D, or at best a C minus. At best, like, that's really, really, really pushing it. I would say a D for Battleground.
Okay, I'm going D plus. I'm going D
plus. D plus don't exist.
Of course they do.
No, they don't.
A D plus.
I would have went D plus if D pluses existed.
But they do
Come on,
exist.
Bro.
What are you talking about?
You went to school and you got like D plus, D minus?
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. Those don't exist.
They must not do that in fucking wherever the fuck you went to school. But
New Jersey?
Yeah,
no.
There was no F minus or F plus, but they did D minus and D plus. Yeah.
No, I first. A lot of people are gonna skip you. I got like I got A plus, A minus, B plus minus, C plus minus, D F.
Yeah, I feel like you're gonna get a lot of tweets for this, being like, you went to a fucking weird school where they didn't give out D pluses and D minuses.
All right, in the Boston school where D pluses and minuses exist, I would definitely go D plus.
Okay, all right. So then we're in agreement here. It was a D plus pay per view. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where they go from here, because, like you said, they've kind of booked themselves into a corner. I'm intrigued, I guess. Like, they have my attention. I'd like to see where the title picture goes with Jinder. I'm interested to see where Cena goes from here.
The U.S. title picture is like, whoa, I don't know what they're going to do with it.
That's a weird one. That's a weird one, but I can easily see them kind of continuing with that feud. There are some loose ends here, though, you know, with Shinsuke and Baron Corbin. Interesting angle there. Are we going to see a cash in at SummerSlam? Maybe, maybe not. So, I mean, at least they've sort of given us some open ends to wonder. There's no like, oh, well, like, this is definitely going to happen at SummerSlam. There's a lot that we don't know, which I like.
Yeah.
I like the uncertain. So yeah, they've kind of set themselves up for the uncertain, which is always fun as a fan to not really know where they go from here. It's okay to not know the answer sometimes.
And it's giving us a reason to watch SmackDown. Like, we have multiple reasons to tune into SmackDown, which we haven't had for a few weeks now. So,
right. You
know what? There are some positives to come out of the show.
Yeah. So, there we go. You have any other thoughts?
I think you should rate and review this show on iTunes. I think you should follow us on Twitter and Instagram at From The Top. We've got some good handles. We had good tweets tonight because our boy was at the front row. Had some cool videos. Go check them out. We had someone send in a video of their reaction to the one of our classic grapple fucks sending in his reaction to the Singh brother falling off a skyscraper through a table. Mm-hmm. All that fancy stuff. And make sure to tune in on Wednesday at noon. As always, we have a huge show. Big interview with a tag team. That's all I'll say about that.
Mm.
That's it for us, though.
Yeah. Yep, that's it. And we will catch you on Wednesday.
See you then.